paper that appeared on Tuesday. And this is work with Adam Brzezowski and Kostas Skenderis, who are currently at the University of Southampton. So what I'd like to tell you is a new way of doing holographic cosmology. And the aim is we're going to try to understand how to do holography for standard cosmologies of a sort of slow roll type form that you might often find. So yeah, let's start off. So the cosmologists don't need reminding of this, but for everyone else, the primordial perturbations in the space-time curvature of the early universe provide a crucial source of information about the physics of the very early universe. And one of the striking things about the primordial perturbations is that their form is almost as simple as you could imagine. They're nearly scale invariant adiabatic perturbations, you know, nearly Gaussian, small amplitudes, and linear theory is a good approximation. For today's talk, the point that I want to emphasize is that the primordial power spectrum, given our current data, is very well characterized by just a simple power law. So the power spectrum of primordial scalar perturbations is just this power law here. Q is the momentum on spatial slices. And this power law is characterized by two numbers. There's an amplitude and there's an exponent, this spectral tilt here, ns minus one. So if ns is exactly one, the spectrum is exactly scale invariant because the momentum dependence drops out. But currently, at least for a very simple fit without tensors and without running, there's evidence for a small red tilt to the primordial power spectrum. But the key point is this primordial power spectrum takes the form of a power law. Why is that? So I want to ask a leading question now, put the cat among the pigeons. Where else in nature do you typically see power law correlation functions, power law two-point functions? And so the answer, of course, is in critical phenomena. So yeah, if you look at your liquid gas phase transition, for example, phase diagram, you know, we've got the critical point here where the phase transition is continuous as opposed to first order, like over here. So if you look at, say, the density-density two-point correlator in this liquid gas system at the critical point, you find that on long wavelengths, this two-point correlator behaves as a power law. And if you're slightly away from the critical point, as I'm just, I can see my face on the slide up there, disturbing. So if you're slightly away from the critical point, then you don't have exactly power law correlators. You have instead an exponential fall off with a certain correlation length. So, okay, power law correlation functions are a hallmark of conformal field theory. Conformal symmetry is very powerful. It fixes the forms of 2 and 3 point functions up to a few constants. So there is a connection here because it, you know, a quantum field theory at its critical point corresponds to a conformal field theory plus a bunch of irrelevant operators. So in other words, a critical QFT is one that flows to a fixed point in the infrared under a normalization group flow. So in general, if you're away from the critical point, you've got a bunch of couplings in your QFT. Some of them are going to be irrelevant. Sorry, some of them are relevant, some of them are irrelevant. If you're away from the critical point, then what happens is under RG flow, you get driven by these relevant operators away from the fixed point. But if you tune your irrelevant operators to zero by carefully adjusting the pressure and temperature, then basically you find yourself on this critical surface where you flow to the fixed point. So on the critical surface, you've only got irrelevant couplings in your QFT. So you can describe it as a CFT plus irrelevant couplings. And on long wavelengths, the behavior is controlled by the conformal field theory at the fixed point. And basically, the critical exponents, you know, the exponents in your power law correlation functions, these are determined by operator dimensions in this conformal field theory. So you might think, what does any of this have to do with cosmology? So that's what I want to try and argue about today. So from a holographic perspective, this is actually a very natural analogy for thinking about inflation in cosmology. So the idea behind holographic cosmology is that we can describe a four-dimensional universe. In this case, it's going to be an inflationary scenario. We can describe this in terms of a three-dimensional quantum field theory without gravity. So some more of the details. So the idea is that cosmic time evolution maps to inverse renormalization group flow in the dual QFT. So basically, late times in the cosmology correspond to the ultraviolet behavior of the dual QFT, and early times in cosmology correspond to the infrared behavior of the QFT. So let's say this QFT is a critical QFT, it's at its critical point. Then basically what this means is that under RG flow, it flows to a fixed point in the infrared. So holographically, this corresponds to a cosmology that at very early times was de sitter, and so it was inflated at early times. Dottie?
I imagine you can answer this, but where does the horizon size fit? This is not just early times, but interesting cosmology. Any times on super horizon modes?
Yeah, they're sort of independent. So basically, the time will map onto the RG scale, and the momentum mode will just correspond to the momentum in the dual QFT. So Yeah, it's better to ask this at the end because it'll be a bit technical otherwise. So what I'm interested in is, what if the dual QFT is a QFT at its critical point and it flows to a fixed point in the infrared? So holographically, this is going to be a universe that at very early times was de sitter, so it was inflating at early times. So basically, you know, the Euclidean conformal group is the same as the de sitter group, so the isometries match. And so what we're going to find is that the spectral tilt in the cosmological power spectrum maps onto the operator dimension in this infrared conformal field theory. So yeah, just to flesh this out a little bit more precisely. So we've got this QFT, which is a CFT plus a bunch of irrelevant operators, and under RG flow, we flow towards this fixed point. And the flow very near the fixed point, the flow nearest the fixed point, is controlled by the operator, the irrelevant operator whose dimension is most nearly marginal. All the other operators flow away very quickly, and what you're left with is just the most nearly marginal of the irrelevant operators. So since we're interested for simplicity in just describing a single field inflation model, let's assume that this most nearly irrelevant operator is a scalar operator, O, and its dimension is going to be just slightly bigger than the space-time dimension. So this is a QFT in three dimensions because the cosmology is four dimensions, and the dimension of this scalar operator is going to be three plus a little bit lambda. So lambda is some small parameter. So basically, the action for this QFT is just going to be a conformal field theory plus a deformation by this scalar operator O, this nearly marginal operator O. And phi is just a coupling of this operator. So
Matt. Can you just motivate a little bit more what the duality is? I mean, so we're just taking holography in spirit and saying there is some theory of one more dimension that should correspond to a four-dimensional universe?
Yeah,
space-like or time-like?
Yeah, the structure of the talk is that I was going to talk about conformal perturbation first, and then I'll move on to more details about holographic cosmology sort of in the middle of the talk. But the basic upshot is that it's basically standard ADS gauge gravity duality plus an analytic continuation that maps it onto a cosmological space-time. So, but yeah, probably we'll come back to this in the middle of the talk. So the QFT, you can think of it, for example, as Euclidean, Livion spatial slices, but I mean, you could also equally well Wick rotate to make it Lorentzian. So it's a little bit of a swings and roundabouts. But if you wish to think in that way, then the QFT is sort of living on the scribe class, on the future boundary of the cosmology. Yeah, so what we're going to find is basically the cosmological power spectrum is going to be given in terms of the two-point function of this scalar operator O. And on long wavelengths, the behavior of this two-point function is controlled by the conformal field theory in the infrared. And so basically, on long wavelengths, you find the power spectrum has a tilt controlled by the dimension of this operator. So the small red tilt of the cosmological power spectrum is related to the fact that this operator is very nearly marginal. So on long wavelengths, the thing flows towards a conformal field theory, and that's what fixes the behavior of correlators. What happens at shorter wavelengths? On shorter wavelengths, you need to understand the behavior further up the RG flow towards the ultraviolet, further away from the fixed point. Now, in general, this is difficult to do, but one situation where you can do this generically is when you have two fixed points that are closely separated. So the RG flow from the IRCFT, if you inverse RG flow, you end up at a new fixed point in the ultraviolet. So I'm talking about a situation where we've got a flow between two fixed points that are very near together. In other words, the difference in coupling between these two fixed points is small. So in this case, you can compute correlation functions for the entire QFT in terms of the correlation functions at either of the fixed points. So you can work out QFT correlators in terms of the conformal field theory correlators. So actually, an example of this where you've probably seen before is the flow. If you're in less than four dimensions, you have this flow from the Gaussian fixed point to the Wilson-Fischer fixed point. And if you're in exactly four dimensions, these two fixed points coincide. If you're slightly less than four dimensions, four minus epsilon dimensions, then these two fixed points are near together, and you can do perturbation expansion in this parameter epsilon that separates the fixed points. So this is one of the ways we compute critical exponents, of course. Another way would be to look at the ON model at large N. In that case, the separation of the Gaussian and the Wilson-Fischer fixed points are also separated by one on N. But the key point here is that the parameter we're doing perturbation theory in is effectively the separation between these two fixed points. And a priori, that's something quite independent of the coupling constant. And this is very important because holographic dualities are typically strong weak dualities. So when one theory is strongly coupled, the other is weakly coupled and vice versa. So if we're interested in understanding standard inflationary cosmology, this corresponds to Einstein gravity, this is described by a QFT that is strongly coupled. So you can't do perturbation theory in the coupling constant. But that's not what we're doing here. What we're doing is we're doing perturbation theory in the parameter separating these two fixed points. So the QFT is at strong coupling, but we can calculate. And this is crucial. This is the sort of crucial point behind what we're doing. So this is very unusual. We can actually compute effectively on both sides of the holographic correspondence, at least for the correlators that we need for cosmology. We can compute on both sides of the holographic correspondence. So we have this strongly coupled QFT, but we can still calculate because we're doing perturbation theory in the separation of the fixed points. No, it's strongly, this is a strongly coupled QFT, it's not. Yeah, so we're not doing perturbation theory about the Gaussian fixed point, we're doing perturbation theory about some strongly coupled fixed point. Yeah. So for example, if instead you wanted to look at perturbation theory about a free theory, about the Gaussian fixed point, that would correspond to a strongly coupled gravity scenario. So this would be a universe that was non-geometric at early times. So I did actually look at this in earlier work, but for today I'm interested in understanding conventional inflationary slow roll models. Yeah, okay, so this is the plan for the talk. Yeah, so the first part is basically I want to tell you about conformal perturbation theory, and I want to tell you how to calculate two-point correlators and a little bit about three-point correlators in this quantum field theory. And then I want to tell you how to go from this holographically to calculate inflationary correlators, so two- and three-point functions of inflationary universes. And we're going to do this purely holographically from the QFT side. And what we're going to find basically is that the form of slow roll inflationary correlators is controlled by the perturbative breaking of conformal field theory, of conformal symmetry about the fixed point. So this is obviously building on a long history of previous work. There's a related paper that appeared recently, in fact last week, by Coonrad Schalm and Gary Hsu and their group, Ted van der Alst. There's also early related work that I'm happy to go into later. So here's the plan for the talk. Yeah, so just to reiterate, we're going to first of all talk about perturbative RG flows. How do you calculate correlators using conformal perturbation theory? And then I'm going to talk about holography for cosmology and how we do holography for cosmology.
So, I just wanted to ask, essentially the same thing as BOCFT or just particular calculation?
It's an extension, yeah. It's a precise version.
No, but is it an extension?
Well, it's not a de Sitter background, it's a slow roll background. So it's only quasi de Sitter. But the spirit is of course the same.
The fixed points are de Sitter.
Yes, that's correct. But we've got an RG flow that takes us between the two, which corresponds to a slow roll universe. Yeah. So it's not,
but it's asymptotically de Sitter.
Yes.
So but then it is the same as
the it's a moot point, yeah. Okay. So in the middle part of the talk, I'm going to tell you about holography for cosmology. And in the final part of the talk, I'm going to tell you what the dual cosmology is. So this is a slow roll model, as we just say with Niash. It's going to turn out to be a slow roll model that's asymptotically to sit in the far past and in the future, but with a different value of the cosmological constant. Yeah, okay. So earlier we were talking about what happens when you look around the IR fixed point. To set up things in a controlled fashion, it's better to think, let's start around the UV fixed point. So we've got some UV fixed point described by some UV CFT, it's some 3D Euclidean QFT, and we've coupled in some marginally relevant scalar operator O that drives the RG flow towards the IR fixed point. So this operator has dimension slightly less than 3, it's 3 minus lambda. Lambda is going to be the small parameter that we use to do all our calculations in, our perturbative calculations. So basically the action is a CFT, we couple in this operator here. Dimensionally, we need to introduce some UV cutoff scale. L is a length scale. This dimension is just fixed by this dimension here. Phi is the dimensionless coupling in the QFT. So there's an old argument that goes back to Polyakov, at least it's in Polyakov's book, about how to compute the beta function of the QFT. So just from here, you can immediately work out the beta function here just by demanding invariance of the partition function under changes of the cutoff. I won't go into the argument here just because it would take us slightly too far astray. But basically, so you can work out the beta function immediately. It looks like this. It's just the leading terms are quadratic. So phi equals 0, this coupling vanishes, and you've just got the CFT. So phi equals 0 is the UV fixed point. And as you go away from the UV fixed point, here's your beta function. And if you plot this, it looks like this. So you can see you flow to a new fixed point at this new point, phi 1. So basically, what are these? So this guy here is the operator dimension, and C is basically the OPE coefficient. So if you look at the OPE of this scalar operator O, then the three-point function has this OPE coefficient C here. So the RG flow is controlled. The quadratic term in the beta function comes from this OPE coefficient C. So if C is a positive, then the beta function looks like this, and you can see that you get this new fixed point here at phi 1. So if you solve for phi 1, it's just given by lambda over 2 pi C. So the point was, if C is a number of order 1, then basically this new fixed point is very close to the origin. So we have these two fixed points that are close together, and this is what I'm doing my perturbation expansion in. So this parameter lambda, it plays a double role. So first of all, so lambda is this nearly marginal dimension of this scalar operator. And on the one hand, it controls the spectral tilt, giving us a small red spectral tilt in the infrared. And on the other hand, it controls the separation of these two fixed points. Yeah, so very little actually is going to... So there's two different approaches. One is that you just take the CFT being completely general. What the data we're going to need are basically going to be this operator dimension lambda and a couple of OPE coefficients in this CFT. Now, if you want to understand standard Einstein gravity, standard slow or inflation, you can use standard ADS CFT to fix these OPE coefficients. But you could also just say, let's take these OPE coefficients general, and this would describe a more general model. For example, you could reproduce higher curvature couplings in the bulk, for example, by choosing these OPE coefficients differently. But the point is the OPE coefficients, you know, these are just numbers, and they're fixed by ADS CFT at the fixed point, because we've got some cosmology that's asymptotically de Sitter. So if you want to fix these OPE coefficients, you can just do a calculation on a fixed ADS background. But for the scalar sector, we just need to understand this this single OPE coefficient C here. No. Well, I mean, you know it's got to be... Well, okay. I mean, it's got to be a CFT because the de Sitter... You know, so it's asymptotically de Sitter in the far future. The de Sitter isometry groups are the same as Euclidean conformal groups. So it can only be a CFT at the fixed point if there is a dual theory. Yeah. So what we're going to... Yeah, okay. So I'm going to talk about how we do holography for cosmology sort of in the middle of the talk. So perhaps it's best if we postpone this question till then. So what we're going to do is basically analytic continuations from standard ADS CFT to propose, this is how we're going to compute correlators in this dual QFT. Yeah, so it will be a CFT with some slightly unusual features. So for example, it's non-unitary, but on the other hand, it's a Euclidean QFT. So non-unitary Euclidean CFTs exist in nature. They describe phase transitions of polymers, for example, you know, the theta point in polymer system. So yeah, so it certainly has unusual features, but I think this is important. This is telling us about cosmology, right? Yeah, good, okay. So the point was just, we've got an operator deformation by this scalar operator. It's nearly marginal. We can compute the beta function. We find that there's a new fixed point that's very nearby. And about the IR fixed point, you can expand the beta function. And you find that this scalar operator is slightly irrelevant about the IR fixed point. And of course, it's slightly relevant about the UV fixed point. Yeah, so this is like the background scenario, the background solution. And okay, for simplicity, let's just truncate to a quadratic beta function. So basically, the effect of higher order terms in your beta function is just to produce subleading lambda corrections to all quantities. So basically, you can absorb all this by a field redefinition and just work with a quadratic beta function. So we're just going to truncate to the quadratic beta function, and then you can actually integrate the beta function to find the coupling. So this is the flow of the coupling. And when you integrate the beta function, you have this integration constant, little phi, that appears. And this integration constant you can think of as parameterizing the behavior as you remove the cutoff. So as you remove the cutoff, the coupling behaves like this. And if you plug that into our operator deformation, you can think of this integration constant as being the dimensionful coupling constant in the QFT. So you can either work in bare perturbation theory where you keep the cutoff here explicit, or you can work in normalized perturbation theory where you remove the cutoff, and then you have to work with this dimensionful coupling phi here. Okay, so let's get to the heart of things. How do you compute correlators in this perturbed quantum field theory described by CFT plus an operator deformation? So what we're going to do is we're going to compute correlators perturbatively in this small parameter lambda, and we're just going to work at leading order in lambda to begin with. So I'm going to write correlators in the CFT with a subscript 0 to distinguish them from correlators in the perturbed theory, which are not going to have any subscript. So if you want to compute, say, the two-point function in the perturbed QFT, it's just given, basically, you just have an insertion of e to the minus e to this deformation. Your path integrals, you've got a path integral of e to the minus s, so we just added to the action this deformation here. So basically, you've just changed your correlation function by an insertion of e to the deformation. So this is how a correlator in the perturbed theory is related to correlators in the pure CFT, the unperturbed theory. And what you can do is you can just expand out this exponential. And if you expand out this exponential, you find that the correlator is represented as a sum of CFT correlators with different numbers of integrated insertions. So if you expand out this exponential, you find that the two-point function in the perturbed theory is given by the two-point function in the CFT, plus a three-point function with one integrated insertion, plus a four-point function with two integrated insertions, and so forth. So the amazing thing is that basically, to work out this two-point function of perturbed QFT, all terms in this series are important. This is the crucial point. This is quite surprising. You know, you might have thought, so you know very well that two-point functions and three-point functions are fixed by conformal symmetry to take a form like this. So your alpha is like the normalization of the two-point function. C was this OPE coefficient we were just talking about earlier. And you know, this is the dimension of the operator here. X1, 2 is X1 minus X2, of course. So of course, two and three-point functions are fixed. So of course, the first two terms in this series are straightforwardly fixed by conformal symmetry. In general, higher point functions in the CFT aren't fixed because you have cross ratios, for example. So you know, the functional form of high point correlators in CFT is not fixed. But the miracle is that we're going to see that basically, when you integrate over these insertions, for a nearly marginal operator, it's actually possible to evaluate uniquely what all these integrals are. And then you can resum them to work out correlated in the perturbed theory. So this is what's technically neat about all this. And it's quite surprising, right? You. So just a quick technical point. So the point is, you know, if two of these, you're integrating over the position of all these operators, if the insertions coincide, you get a singularity. So to regulate this integral, we're going to have, you know, we've got a UV cutoff in the theory that says no two insertion points are allowed to approach closer together than this distance lambda. So, okay, this is the point we're just talking about. So what we're gonna find is that basically the integral with n integrated insertions goes as 1 over lambda to the n. And in this when we expanded this out, we've got a factor of phi to the n. Now phi is a coupling in the QFT. Remember, it runs to a new fixed point in the infrared that's very nearby. So phi is always small. Phi is always bounded by lambda in this RG flow. So basically, if you look at the nth term in this expansion here, it's the same order. All terms in the expansion are of the same order. They all contribute at leading order in lambda because you've got a factor of phi to the n, and this goes as, so this guy goes as lambda to the n, and this guy goes as 1 over lambda to the n. So you really have to take into account all terms in this expansion. This is what's so neat about it. So okay, the argument is perhaps a little bit subtle. Maybe it's a little bit too technical, but I've got two slides on it just because I think it's fun, and you know, hopefully some of you will be interested in this. The basic idea, it's pretty subtle, but the basic idea is that you want to write a differential equation for what happens when you vary the cutoff. And what you can do is you can write a recursion relation that relates the integral in, which has n integrated insertions, to the integral in minus 1 with one less insertion. And the way you do that is using the OPE. So as a simple example, let's just consider the integral with one integrated insertion, i1. Now, of course, you could work this out directly because for a CFT, you know what the three-point function is. But what I'm trying to show you here is a general argument that will then extend to n integrated insertions. So we were saying that you can't, get two points closer together than the cutoff. So we've got one insertion here, one insertion here, x1 and x2, and the cutoff is some circle of radius lambda about here. Then we've got this other insertion point z, and you integrate over the position of this insertion point. So that's what those step functions in the top line are here. They say none of these insertions can get closer together than the cutoff lambda. Now what happens if I change lambda? So basically, if you change lambda, then what you're doing is you're changing the width of these shells, right? So basically, if you change lambda, what you pick up is a contribution from these two shells here. So basically, you know, if you change lambda, what you do is you're picking up contributions for when you get when this guy touches the shell. And you can rotate it all the way around the shell and all the way around that shell. So basically, what you get is you've got a factor of minus 2, you've got a factor of the area of the shell, 4 pi lambda squared. And when they touch, you can use the OPE to contract them. So you contract OO to just a single O, and that gives you a factor of the OPE coefficient C here. So you can see that if you vary the cutoff, you get a factor of minus, the minus sign is because you're reducing the area. You get a factor of 2 because there are two shells. You get the factor of the spherical area, 4 pi lambda squared, and then you use the OPE coefficient to remove. So you've gone from 3 insertions to 2 insertions. So basically what you've done is you've got a differential equation that gives you a relation between I1 and I0. And you can integrate this up. And if you integrate it up, you get this. The arbitrary function is fixed by dilatation invariance. And it's kind of clever because you can work out the integration constant by considering the limit as you send lambda to 0. So if you move, if you send little lambda to 0, the operator becomes marginal. And in this limit, if you look at the behavior of this, you have to have b equals 1. Otherwise, you'll get a singularity as you send little lambda to 0. So basically, the fact that it's got to be smooth as you take this operator to be marginal, that's what fixes the integration constant. And you can see from this thing here, if you send little lambda to 0 with b equals 1, you get a logarithm appearing. So basically what's going on is that if you go from a nearly marginal operator to an exactly marginal operator, then what you get is a logarithm appearing. You get a conformal anomaly. And basically, the coefficients of the logarithms in this exactly marginal theory, these are fixed, these are universal. And if you're slightly away from exact marginality, then basically the coefficients of the logarithms are what's appearing in these functions here. So basically, the miracle is probably connected with a conformal anomaly. But yeah, probably this is getting a little bit too technical. But the basic idea is you can write these differential equations relating n integrated insertions to n minus 1 integrated insertions. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, sorry, so this is, I was trying to skip it because I thought I'd get too technical. So the point is, yeah, so the OPE has a whole series of terms here on the right-hand side. These would give you other terms here, but the point is that they're sub-leading in lambda. So the crucial point is that you've got, if you look at the powers, if you look at this line here, we're assuming O is the only nearly marginal operator. So as you send little lambda to 0, the only thing that comes to marginal is O. So its power here is 3 minus lambda, and you've got lambda squared on the top from the spherical shell. So when you integrate that up, that gives you lambda to the lambda over lambda. Whereas if it were some other power, if you had some other operator, let's say you had some other operator in your OPE that went as, you know, let's say it went as x12 to the power 5, then basically in this argument you would have 4 pi lambda squared, and when you use this thing here, you'll get a factor 1 over lambda to the 5. You know, you can add in some lambda here, it doesn't matter. The thing is, when you integrate this with respect to lambda, you won't get a 1 over lambda appearing. You know, it's only if this power were 3, because if this power is 3, then if you integrate that up, you get lambda to the lambda over lambda. So the point is that if there are other, there will generically be other terms in your OPE, but the point is they'll give you a subleading contribution in little lambda when you integrate them up. So that's why we can neglect them, because we're working at leading order in little lambda. Yeah. So there's lots of wonderful subtleties to think about, but we thought about all this very, very carefully. So you can generalize this argument, of course, to n integrated insertions. And it's nice to think of this as some kind of dilute gas picture. So you've got these two fixed insertions, then you've got this cloud of n integrated insertions. And if you vary the cutoff, then basically you just pick up contributions from bringing pairs together, from bringing atoms together. So in that case, you get a very similar differential equation. All you've got to do is work out the combinatorial factor that tells you how many different ways of bringing atoms together in pairs there are. So, you know, for the general case, you can contract against, you've got n objects, you've got to bring them together in pairs, that gives you n choose 2, and you've got two fixed insertions, that gives you the plus 2. Yeah, good. So that's this caveat here. So basically they're subleading. So in general there would also be triple overlaps and higher, but the point is they'll be subleading in lambda. Basically the phase space is much smaller, but the order of magnitude of the integrand is basically the same. So without wanting, perhaps we'll cap the technical discussion here, but the basic point is that you can compute a recursion relation that allows you to work out what all these objects are with n integrated insertions. And this is something of a miracle. So the upshot is then that you can write the two-point function in this operator deformed theory as a sum of CFT two-point functions. So we related n integrated insertions to n minus 1 to n minus 2 to n minus 3, and we ended up with just the CFT two-point function. So what we find is that we can write the two-point function in the perturbed QFT as a sum of CFT two-point functions, but with shifted dimensions. And this is basically a generic feature. So this, you look at this as a binomial series, you resum it, and you Fourier transform, and hey presto, this is the correlator for the two-point function in this deformed theory. So you can see it depends on the normalization of the CFT two-point function, depends on the momentum, obviously, and it depends on the coupling. This is the coupling in the QFT, and this guy, remember, this was just lambda over 2 pi c. This was just telling you where the IR fixed point was. So this may look a little bit unwieldy, but if you look at it, it's actually quite intuitive. Basically, on short wavelengths, this thing scales as q to the minus 2 lambda, which just reflects the dimension in the UV. You know, on short wavelengths, this guy you can forget about, and you just get q to the minus 2 lambda, and that's consistent with the UV dimension. In the UV, this operator is slightly relevant. Whereas in the infrared, this term is very large. It dominates over the 1, so you can pull this out the front, and you get q to the plus 2 lambda, and this reflects the scaling in the IR. So about the IR CFT, this operator is marginally irrelevant. Yeah, this is the dimensionful QFT coupling. So the action is just a conformal field theory. Maybe it was a minus, I forget which. Yeah, okay, so perhaps that was a little bit technical, but the point was I just wanted to give you a flavor of the arguments we're using to do computations in conformal perturbation theory. That is where 90% of the effort went. You can also extend these arguments to three-point functions using very similar methods. And once again, you find that three-point functions in the perturbed theory can be expressed as a sum of exact CFT correlators with shifted dimensions. And of course, the exact CFT three-point functions, their form is fixed by conformal invariants. And since we're going to be computing inflation correlators involving gravitons, we're also interested in computing correlators with stress tensor insertions. So basically, you know, if this is your action here, you can go away, you can compute the stress tensor in the perturbed theory, and you find that the transverse traceless part of the stress tensor is the same for the perturbed theory and the unperturbed theory. Okay, so that was just to give you a flavor of the arguments we use to do calculations in conformal perturbation theory. That is where all the magic is taking place. Let's now discuss holographic cosmology. So there's two things we want to set up here. So we've computed all the correlation functions we want in this perturbed QFT at strong coupling using conformal perturbation theory. Now we want to understand how do we map these correlators onto cosmological correlators. So the two things we have to do is, first of all, we have to work out what are these inflationary two and three-point functions, and secondly, we have to work out what is this inflationary slow roll model, what's the potential, because then that will give us a cross-check from the gravity calculations. So both are actually sort of accomplished in a couple of lines, but since it builds on previous work, I want to first of all just give you a brief review of sort of previous work where we set up all this holographic framework. So the crucial point I guess I want to make is that from an observational perspective at least, we're interested primarily in computing tree-level cosmological correlators. Maybe at some point we're also interested in doing loop corrections order by order, but primarily we're interested in tree-level cosmological correlators from a practical point of view. So this corresponds to working at large n in the dual QFT. So the claim I'm making is... Yes, absolutely. So the point is that if you're perturbably quantizing small fluctuations around an FRW background geometry to compute tree-level cosmological correlators and then order by order in loops, this corresponds to working at large n perturbation in the dual QFT. And my claim is that basically holographic cosmology is well-defined, at least within large n perturbation theory. Now, outside of large N perturbation theory, non-perturbatively, there are problems. It's difficult to understand what goes on. So I'm not going to claim anything about that at present. What I'm saying is restricted to calculating cosmological correlators perturbatively. And after all, this is the primary thing that we're actually measuring. So in a sense, it's good to have a practical motivation here. So what we're going to find is that basically within this context, within this perturbative framework, then basically it's sufficient just to establish a holographic map between cosmology. Basically, you can take your inflationary cosmology, and there's a precise one-to-one mapping onto a perturbed domain wall space-time describing a holographic RG flow. So you can basically just do a mapping to standard ADS gravity dualities. So yeah, despite the technical words, so basically the top line here is just standard holography. So you've got some holographic energy flow. So this just means a space-time that's asymptotically ADS. Could also be asymptotically power law, but let's just think of it as being asymptotically ADS. And this is dual through standard ADS CFD to some quantum.
Yeah. I think you mentioned
that maybe
describing an equation with a slightly implied theory, which is fine. But because, and in fact, maybe that's all you could expect. The equation itself is pretty implied. In the sense that there is a serious mission problem. One doesn't know what the mission conditions are.
Yeah, so the measure, so the trouble is the sort of measure problem gets back to this non-perturbative stuff that's harder to understand. But in a way, if we can get the perturbative stuff under control, then we can start looking at things like the measure problem, what happens non-perturbatively. And I think actually this would be, you know, this is the right framework to look at this. You know that to hit a fixed point, you've got to fine-tune your dual QFT to hit the critical point. So it may well be that these fine-tunings correspond to each other. Yes, that's right. So what I'm trying to argue here is, well, what I'm trying to argue here is that there is one and that we can actually calculate and the correlators match up by testing on both sides. Perturbatively, absolutely. But this is the primary non-perturbatively. Yeah, but that would just be a matter that you didn't do your holographic normalization properly. I mean, I don't you know, so the question is, how do you set up a correct measure for inflation? And this is a very interesting issue. And of course, as you point out, there are divergences. You've got to be very careful to figure out how to do this.
It's very clear that there isn't.
But I mean, the point. So what I'm trying to show you today is that if we just look at perturbatively calculating tree-level cosmological correlators, it's perfectly possible to do this using a dual QFT. And in this case, we can calculate on both sides and check the holographic framework I'm about to tell you about. So, So that's right. So I think, you know, ultimately you do want to have a non-perturbative understanding. So basically this continuation, this framework I'm going to tell you about, it's not clear that it works. In fact, the reason to think it won't work beyond large M perturbation theory. But the idea is that this is giving us a lot of clues as to what this dual QFT really is. You would then hopefully be able to identify what this QFT is, and then that would determine the non-perturbative behavior. And the non-perturbative behavior wouldn't correspond via this analytic continuation to cosmology, to ADS CFT. That's right. But on the other hand, it's pretty striking that it works at least perturbatively. So you know, it'd be slightly odd if it worked perturbatively but didn't work at all non-perturbatively, in my opinion. The other thing is that, you know, standard arguments for holography based on black holes and, you know, the area, you know, the fact that black hole entropy scales as the area, this is independent of the cosmological constant. You know, standard arguments for holography, the old-fashioned arguments of it Hoft, these imply holography should work more generally beyond just asymptotically ADS spacetimes. But of course, yeah, this is just a, yes, this is a statement of intent, not a proof. But I think this is the way to get towards non-perturbative questions. I mean, if you can understand, you know, by setting up this perturbative framework, we learn very precise properties about what this dual QFT is. If we're lucky, this may even, for example, define what this dual QFT is. I could write down an action, and then I would claim this is the non-perturbative definition of quantum gravity on de Sitter spacetime. So I mean, that's where you want to go ultimately. But to do that, you need to know, you need to get all the clues you can just from the perturbative physics, and that's what we're trying to do. In the meantime, at least at the perturbative level, what I'm showing you is really a test of this framework, because we can really calculate on both sides of the correspondence and check the answers, and they match exactly. Yeah, so the framework for doing this perturbatively is that the top line is just standard gauge gravity duality. If you've got some 3D QFT that's dual to some asymptotic ADS space-time, you can do, basically there's a one-to-one mapping between perturbed cosmological space-times and these asymptotic ADS space-times here. So this is the gravity side of the duality. And on the QFT side of the duality, you can translate those analytic continuations we did on the gravity side into analogous analytic continuations of QFT variables. So basically, you can infer a holographic dictionary for cosmology just using standard holographic duality plus analytic continuations that work on both sides of the correspondence. So again, the details probably aren't too relevant for today's talk, but just to reassure you that I've done the calculations carefully. The point is that if you look at fluctuations in cosmology, basically you can think of them as functions of Newton's constant kappa squared And they also depend on the momentum on spatial slices Q. And basically what you can do is you can set up a mapping between a solution of a perturbed holographic energy flow and a perturbed cosmological solution. And so giving a solution of one problem, I can automatically find a solution of the other problem just by doing this continuation here. So it's actually very simple. You basically just flip the sign of the potential that takes you from like ADS to de sitter, right? And the other thing you need to do is continue the magnitude of the three momentum. So you can think of this continuation as a bit like T goes to IR, if you like. We're going from a Euclidean RG flow to a Lorentzian cosmology. This is purely for convenience. You could always Wick rotate the QFT to make it Lorentzian as well, but it's more convenient just to work with a Euclidean QFT, because then basically the vacuum prescription you have in your holographic duality maps onto the Bunch-Davis vacuum at early times. So I went away and spent a summer proving this exactly to second order engage event perturbation theory. So this is all rigorous. So okay, so what does this analytic continuation you do on the gravity side? So this works at nonlinear order, so you can apply it to non-Gaussianities, right? So what does this continuation map to in the dual QFT? So basically kappa squared over L squared maps onto the number of colors in the dual QFT.
So you had the last line you said
Yeah. Yeah. So basically, I chose a sign in this continuation. When you look at the equations of motion, you flip q squared to minus q squared. If you look more carefully, it has to be q goes to minus iq rather than plus iq. And the reason why is that in holography, you've got some Euclidean QFT, and your boundary conditions are that modes die off exponentially in the interior. And when you continue this to the cosmology, basically, you want to map this onto the Bunch-Davis vacuum condition at early times. So to do that, that fixes that sign in the continuation there. So basically, you know, you want your early time behavior where in cosmology at early times, you want fields to be in the Bunch-Davis vacuum, and holographically, you want that to map onto fields that die away smoothly in the interior of your domain wall space-time.
So if I don't want to start with Bunch-Davis vacuum?
Then this would correspond to some QFT not in the vacuum state, and then you would have to sort of go through things again from scratch, just carefully analyze it. I don't know about that case. Okay, so we've got this continuation of the gravity theory from a cosmology to a perturbed domain wall that's asymptotically ADS. How do we translate this continuation into QFT variables? So flipping kappa squared V, flipping the potential just corresponds to flipping N squared to minus N squared. This dual QFT is a large N gauge theory. It has some gauge group, for example, that might be SUN or something or other. So N is the rank of the gauge group, number of colors. And the continuation of the momentum is exactly the same. So the philosophy here is that, first of all, we're going to do our computations in standard ADS CFT with some regular QFT, you know, that describes some asymptotic ADS space-time. Having computed the correlators, we then apply this analytic continuation to the correlators. And so the point is basically the correlators are analytic functions of these variables, and so they behave analytically under this continuation here. So at least, you know, so at least as far as getting the correlators, this prescription is the correct prescription. You know, it's whatever your QFT really is, whatever its Lagrangian is, its correlators have to be the ones obtained via this analytic continuation here.
Matt? I have a question about what happens to the momenta when you perform this analytic continuation. So, I mean, there is the difference between Lorentzian, Euclidean, and Euclidean.
Absolutely, right? Yeah. Yeah, generally I haven't investigated the sort of causality properties very carefully. It'd be very interesting to see this, because obviously the cosmology has all these causality properties about whether you're inside the light cone outside, and it'd be interesting to understand. You should be able to basically, you know, using this framework, you can map this onto fluctuations on some ADS, Euclidean ADS problem, and you should be able to translate the questions of causality in your Lorentzian problem or ultimately into some property of this dual QFT. But it's a fairly subtle thing, because you can follow this mapping through and work out what happens. I simply haven't looked at it. But in principle, you should be able to work it out. So you get the same correlators. So you can map fluctuations about some perturbed you've got some perturbed cosmological solution with fluctuations, and you can literally map that solution onto an ADS problem with fluctuations about some ADS domain wall, and then you can use standard holography there. Yes, good. No, I haven't worked it out, but one could work it out using this framework, right? It'd be very interesting to do. Yeah, good. Yeah, right. No, Yeah, right. Yeah, so that will be an interesting extension to do, to look at. So primarily, I've just started with equal time because, of course, I'm trying to get back. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, it's a perturbed RG. Yeah. Yeah, I suppose you could check. Basically, the behavior on long and short wavelengths would probe either CFT, and so yeah. But yeah, it would be interesting to generalize this. That's right. Yeah, so basically what you can do is you can view what we're doing today as a test of this prescription, because we've got some strongly coupled QFT, but we can still calculate using conformal perturbation theory, and we can literally check that standard slow roll inflation calculations indeed reproduce what I'm about, you know, what we're going to get holographically. So if you like, you can view this as a test of this perturbative prescription. On which side? Oh, you want like... Yeah, I was thinking about this. Yeah, like a master scalar field on or a scalar field on a fixed background. Well, the exponential potential, yeah, you mean for large parameter in the exponential, so it's nearly de Sitter, right? Yeah, good. Yeah, that's something I'm thinking about, because basically these asymptotically parallel backgrounds correspond to like non-conformal brains. So you have to use this sort of earlier formulation that I used to work in earlier. So in principle, you can analyze asymptotically power-law spacetimes as well. So you could try and do power-law inflation using similar methods. That's right. I'm simply, you know, this scenario was sort of more obvious to start with. But that would be an interesting thing to push next. Yeah, so this is a glorious set of formulae here. But the idea is basically, so the details aren't too important, but basically in previous work, what we've done is we set up precise formulae that link cosmological power spectra, so this is the power spectra of curvature perturbation zeta, that link cosmological formulae to correlators of the dual QFT. So, you know, in the dual QFT, we just saw how to compute the two-point function for this scalar operator O, and you plug it into this formula, and you get back the cosmological two-point function. Now, one thing I've done here is that in general, there are sort of, there's this analytic continuation, and there's taking imaginary parts involved, but in this particular case, for the operator deformation of the CFT, it's very easy just to do this analytic continuation because, you know, because there are no scales in the theory, you know how the momenta appear. So you can just do the analytic continuation automatically, and that's how you get back these formulae here without any analytic continuation. So these are basically the exact formulae. And, you know, for example, the graviton two-point function depends on the transverse traceless piece of the stress tensor two-point function, the dual QFT. And there are analogous formulae, for example, for the scalar bispectrum in terms of the three-point functions in the dual QFT. One thing that's very important is you have to calculate these two-point terms in the numerators here in order to get back the correct results. Earlier work often omitted that. Details aren't too important. So basically what we do is we did our conformal perturbation theory. We worked out these correlators of this strongly coupled QFT. We plugged them into these holographic formulae worked out by this mapping. And what we get back are exactly slow roll inflationary two and three-point functions for scalars and for gravitons. And it corresponds to a slow roll cosmology with epsilon and eta star of this form here. So, and H is basically one to leading order. You get, so the Hubble parameter horizon crossing is one, but there's corrections at order lambda cubed, as we'll see later. So basically the first thing to notice is this is a slow roll scenario with epsilon being much smaller than eta. So eta is of order lambda. Remember lambda was the dimension, you know, the difference from marginal, the operator dimension of this scalar O was 3 minus lambda. So eta is of order lambda, but epsilon is of order lambda to the 4. So this is a slow roll scenario with small epsilon relative to eta. And this Q naught appearing here, I've just repackaged. Remember in the QFT, there was this dimensionful coupling phi. This was some arbitrary dimensionful coupling. I repackaged that into an arbitrary momentum scale Q naught. So that's the Q naught. C? Yeah, so C is depend. So C, I'm assuming it's positive in order one in order to get an RG flow to a new fixed point that's nearby. In principle, what you then do is you fix it using ADS CFT at the fixed point. So you do an exact ADS calculation on exact ADS spacetime. That'll fix C for you. It's essential that it's some positive number of order one in order to get a new flow to a new fixed point that's nearby. If it were negative, for example, you'd run off, you know, the IR behavior would be... No. Or very large. Yeah. So if you tune it, of course you'll run into problems. So the idea is I want to get a new fixed point. You know, the new fixed point was lambda over c, basically lambda over 2 pi c. So if c is very small, then the new fixed point will be very far away, and then we won't be able to do perturbation theory. So yes, I'll get onto that at the end. I'm making you wait for it. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
But
No, no, no. That I have an exact understanding.
So,
but,
so now, my question is.
So you can also.
How do you go from here to,
like, I will get onto that in a second. But actually, you can do it. You can also do exactly what you're just saying. So basically, time maps exactly onto the lambda. So basically, the RG scale in the dual QFT maps onto the time coordinate T is minus lambda exactly. And basically, you can look at the background solution to read off the slow roll parameters just from the background solution. So you don't have to work them out from the correlators. You can also just cross-check them from the background, basically, because the bulk inflaton maps onto the dimensionless coupling phi in the QFT, and the time maps onto the RG scale lambda. And so you can basically just calculate it from the background solution. I'm just presenting this form to try and make it look nicer on the slide, basically. But yeah, so you get back slow roll correlation functions of the standard form. I've just splashed them on the slide here. The form is important, but basically you get back the standard slow roll correlations, and you also get back the standard three-point functions here. I'm not sure exactly. Perhaps we'll come back to this in a second when we are. I'll give you the background in just a second. So at the moment, I'm just trying to tell you what I've done holographically, and then I'll come off the background in just a second. So one thing I just wanted to point out quickly was that the scalar bispectrum is of this local form here. And this is just because we're working at leading order in this expansion of small lambda. Basically, this term here is just the local piece, and this goes as, you can see there's two zeta zetas here. So basically, this guy goes as eta times h to the fourth over epsilon squared. So the leading term here is of order lambda to the minus seven. You know from the first order slow roll result that there's a sub-leading piece in the, well, at leading order in slow roll, there's also another piece in the scalar bispectrum that goes, that's sort of roughly equilateral. And that piece goes like this. So this piece is of order lambda to the minus four. So this is sub-leading in expansion in lambda. So basically, these are consistent with the slow roll results, but we're really doing the lambda expansion, not slow roll expansion. The correlator with two gravitons, basically you can't compute at leading order in small lambda because there's a quirk that happens. Basically for the CFT dual to Einstein gravity, there's a certain OPE coefficient that vanishes. That means that you can't get this correlator till higher order. Basically you have to look at the OPE of O in a stress tensor giving you back another stress tensor. And it happens that basically, yeah, you write down the bulk action. There's no cubic coupling between graviton scalar. And so basically this OPE coefficient vanishes. So it's a quirk of Einstein gravity. If you added, say, a vial curvature term in the bulk, vial squared piece to the action, you could probably get back zeta gamma gamma at leading order, because then this OPE coefficient wouldn't vanish. We can discuss that more later. Okay, so what is the cosmology? Okay, so you don't have to guess, you can work this out systematically. So this is just some slow roll inflationary cosmology. What I need to do is I need to work out the potential V. So there's no need to guess, you can just work it out systematically using holography. So since this cosmology, this inflationary cosmology is corresponding to a holographic RG flow. RG flow is monotonic. So I'm interested, first of all, in cosmological solutions where the time evolution of the scalar field is monotonic. So when that's the case, your second order Friedmann equations could be rewritten in just first order form here. This is the sort of Hamilton-Jacobi approach, if you like. If you think phi of t can be inverted to give t of phi, if the thing is monotonic, and the Hubble rate is a function of time, so the Hubble rate then becomes a function of the scalar field. That's this w here. And then, so basically, given this function w, we call it a superpotential, you can work out the Hubble rate, and you can also work out phi dot, and you can work out the potential in terms of w. Okay, so I want some cosmology that's going to be asymptotically de Sitter in basically the far past and the far future, because that's going to correspond to these two fixed points in the UV and in the IR. Let's start about the UV. So we want some fixed point, and basically a fixed point, a de Sitter asymptotics corresponds to a region where the potential becomes flat, where V prime vanishes. So if you differentiate this equation, V prime equals zero corresponds to either W prime is zero or this equation here. And basically only the first one corresponds to holographic RG flows that are stable. So,
what is the W?
Well, through this equation, if you like, it's one way of thinking about it. Yeah, it's just the Hubble constant expressed in terms. We'll see. So we'll see the connection between W. So W is okay. If you yeah. So so basically, if you look at this equation here, basically phi dot is given by W prime. So holographically, phi is going to map to the dimensionless coupling in the QFT. The time derivative is going to map to the derivative with respect to the RG scale. So the left-hand side is like the beta function. So basically, W prime is going to map at leading order to the beta function in the dual QFT. So W is basically like the integral of the beta function. The beta function, for these scenarios with perturbative RG flows, the beta function is the gradient of some scalar function, and that function is W. At leading order, all this works. Okay, so basically, we've argued that we've got to have a critical point where this V, where W prime goes to zero, and that gives you a de Sitter asymptotic region. I can choose phi to be zero in the infinite future, and then I just do a Taylor expansion about phi equals zero. This term is because you want to get back a cosmological constant, and I set the de Sitter radius to one. There's no linear term because it's got to describe a de Sitter asymptotic region where W prime vanishes. And then you just got a Taylor, the remaining terms in the Taylor expansion like this. So when you work out the potential and you map it to a holographic RG flow, this guy here just tells you the mass term and the potential. So this just maps onto the operator dimension of this dual operator. So basically A2 is just connected to the dimension of the operator dual to the inflaton. And basically A3 tells you about the cubic interaction term of the bulks, and that maps onto this OPE coefficient C. Yeah, so there's this work with Paul Townsend and Antoine van Prooyen and Kostas Skenderis called fake supersymmetry, if you like. So basically, you can think of cosmology as having the same structure of supersymmetry, but basically with some funny sign changes. So, you know, you've got ADS domain walls that are supersymmetric, that correspond to supersymmetric QFTs, and when you analytically continue them, you get this fake supersymmetric structure. So this is why we call it a superpotential. In the holographic RG flow problem, this will be a superpotential. Yeah, in cosmology, you can just purely think of it as being the Hubble rate. So, you know, T is a function of phi, so this is just the Hubble rate expressed as a function of the inflaton. That's sufficient. Yeah. Yeah, so the potential is related to W prime squared minus 3/2 W squared. Yeah, so you could also read, that's right, so given a potential, you could try and solve this equation. Absolutely. Absolutely, yeah, that's right. So basically, we just fix the coefficients in the Taylor expansion using holography. This guy maps onto the operator dimension. This guy maps onto the OPE coefficient from the three-point function. And basically, our cosmology is then the one that has a potential corresponding to this cubic superpotential here. The higher order terms in the Taylor expansion, these just produce subleading effects at subleading order in little lambda. So you can calculate these, but they're not really of interest. You can get them by field redefinitions. And as Dolly was just pointing out, the potential W prime squared minus W squared, this is just some sextic potential. And the partners of relevance is just the hilltop nearest the origin. So this is the far future, this is the UV CFT, and this is the IR CFT here. So it's like a hilltop model where you start off at very early times, your cosmology starts off at the top of the hill here, and it just rolls down to the origin. And the separation, the distance it rolls, is of order lambda. It's very small because these two CFTs are very nearby in the space of couplings. So
CFT fixed points always correspond to critical points.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, that's right. Because if the cosmology has a de Sitter asymptotic region, that's what maps to a CFT, then V prime is zero because it's momentarily de Sitter, and if V prime is zero, W prime, this is a plot of V. This is a plot of V here, that's right. So V prime x zero just corresponds to de Sitter regions. Absolutely, yeah, so that's right. So the de Sitter isometry group corresponds to the Euclidean conformal group in one dimension less.
Right.
Yeah. So you can solve for the background. You can basically solve these equations exactly for the background solution. I mean, the details aren't too important. What's interesting is the asymptotic behavior. So if you look at what happens at late times, you just get a de Sitter asymptotic region like this, and at early times, you get a de Sitter asymptotic region with a different value of the Hubble parameter. And you can see the difference in Hubble parameters is of order lambda cubed. So basically we're flowing from one de Sitter epoch to another de Sitter epoch with a slightly different cosmological constant. And yeah, I'll leave it there.
Only slightly different?
Lambda cubed order. Okay. Yeah, so the difference is exactly this quantity here, and phi one was of order lambda, so this guy's of order lambda cubed. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you can just compute the Slöwold parameters in the usual fashion. Of course, you get back exactly what we had before. So the point is we've got this class of cosmological models where we can calculate both on the QFT side and on the bulk side. And this is really unusual because this dual QFT is at strong coupling. So this is really a test. You can also view this as a test of standard holography. If you just want to do things, if you just look at the ADS version of this problem, this is a test of standard holography, right? I think it's a new test of standard holography. What I'm doing here is I'm also doing this analytic continuation to the cosmology problem just because that's where my interests lie. So okay, so let's just summarize the story. The talk is over. So basically we looked at a perturbative RG flow between two nearby fixed points, and we can do a perturbation expansion in the parameter controlling the separation of these fixed points, which is little lambda. This parameter plays this role, multiple roles. So on the one hand, it controls the deviation from scaling variance of the cosmological power spectrum. On the other hand, it controls the separation of these two fixed points. And basically, even though this QFT is strongly coupled, you can compute correlators uniquely, at least 2 and 3 point correlators you can compute uniquely using conformal perturbation theory. And the form of these correlators is just fixed by the broken conformal invariance. So this is really a successful test of the holographic framework I'm proposing, right? We can really calculate on both sides, get exact answers, check that they match. And we find that the power spectrum non-Gaussianities are basically, the slow roll parameters depend on these data of the CFT. So the CFT data we're using are basically the operator dimension lambda and a certain number of OPE coefficients. So for the scalar sector, we just need this scalar OPE coefficient C. If you want to include tensors, then there's also one other OPE coefficient you need that happens to vanish for Einstein gravity. But basically, in terms of the CFT data, the cosmological predictions are then fixed. So further directions, I mean, this is actually quite interesting, you know. So what we did is we inputted the OPE coefficients by doing calculations on exact ADS. But if you're interested in, say, a bulk that isn't Einstein gravity, that has higher curvature terms, then these OPE coefficients would be slightly different. So the point is that the perturbative breaking of conformal symmetry fixes the form of inflationary 2 and 3 point functions in terms of the CFT data. So it might be interesting, you know, maybe you could try and classify, for example, different slow roll inflationary models according to the conformal field theory that describes them, or, you know, that describes the fixed point to which they flow or originate from. It'd be also interesting if you could try and push this to, for example, models where epsilon and eta are the same order. That's more difficult to describe using conformal perturbation theory, but I still suspect it may be possible. It would be also interesting just to study this story from the bulk perspective, just from a purely inflationary point of view, see what perturbative breaking conformal invariance brings you. Of course, a lot of people are interested in that direction. The other thing that might be fun is to look at, for example, multiple deformations. If you have multi-scalar fields, you know, if you have multiple scalar deformations in your CFT, this would correspond to multiple scalar fields in the bulk, and then you can have entropy perturbations. And this will be due to the mixing of operators under RG flow in the dual QFT. So you could probably calculate this on both sides and again try and match up. So I'll stop there. Thanks for your time.
So I'm trying to wrap my head a little bit more around this conjecture duality where you do the analytic continuation. So any asymptotically ADS space that, you know, is inhomogeneous in space, the claim is that that maps onto a cosmology. Is that?
I proved it. The second order.
Right? Okay, that's
yeah.
Right.
No,
and so since it's asymptotically ADS, it will map onto something that's asymptotically de Sitter. You say you're guaranteed you always have at least one fixed point in your conformal field theory.
Absolutely.
And then just to have calculational control, you're not allowed to consider every single possible inhomogeneous asymptotically ADS space time that analytically continues.
You are allowed, it's just you can't calculate on the QFT side for them.
Yeah, so you just can't calculate. But yeah. But the conjecture is that they exist.
Absolutely,
and,
yeah.
And they might have some. So, I mean, is there any, I guess this trick only really applies to these hilltop type inflationary models, it seems. Is there anything
yeah.
I mean,
of course, this is all very new. There's a lot of scope for generalization of different kinds of potentials. So, for example, you know, if you tune the cubic term to be zero, then your flow depends on the higher order terms and the potential. And basically, there are generalizations I've worked out of this scenario, different potentials that still have this property of a flow from one fixed point to a nearby fixed point, but the potential takes quite a different form. So you basically can use, you know, one thing you can do is you can use field redefinitions to add in all those higher terms in the Taylor series. Another thing you can do is try tuning the cubic term to zero, and then, you know, there's a whole series of models based on that. So there are lots of extensions of this, but yes, I generally, at the moment, it looks like, you know, I'm only confident that it's going to work. You know, the fact that we can calculate on the QFT side seems to be related to the fact that we've got these RG flow between two nearby fixed points. So I think that's probably what I need to keep. And then the many different realizations of that scenario.
Can you have a consider space with arbitrarily small cosmological constant? Can you end in Minkowski space, in other words? Or?
Well, what I really wanted to do, well, what I'd ultimately like to do, of course, is you know, have a universe that at early times was de Sitter with fairly large cosmological constant, and late times has a very, very small cosmological constant, so to match the dark energy of today. And in between, of course, you know, in the real world, we've got matter and radiation domination. So this would just correspond to a more complicated RG flow where the evolution in between these two fixed points is much more complicated, and you'd have to look at multiple operators, and that would they would come in and, you know, so the inflationary single field inflation would correspond to when the RG flow is controlled by just a single operator. And then in general, more operators would come in and change the nature of the RG flow, and that would end single field inflation. That would be reheating. But yeah, ultimately, I'd like sort of something where you end up, it would be nice if you could understand this difference between the future cosmological constant and the past cosmological constant using a scenario of this kind. But this obviously doesn't work here because in this model, the difference between future and past is of order lambda cubed, so it's very small. But my argument for that is that we don't really, so that's why I'm selling this as a model of the early universe, because basically, if you had some more complete model that took into account reheating matter radiation domination and future dark energy, that would correspond to changing the ultraviolet behavior of the QFT. So as far as the long wavelength behavior goes, that would be exactly the same as that of this QFT. So in other words, given two models in the same universality class, so if I give you two QFTs in the same universality class, they flow to the same IR fixed point. And the behavior on long wavelengths corresponding to early times, this is basically controlled by the behavior near the fixed point. That's the universal part of the behavior. So this simple toy model here, you know, this will give you the same behavior on long wavelengths as some more complicated model that gives you reheating and flows to some different fixed point in the UV with a cosmological constant that matches today. So the idea is that, yeah, you know, ultimately, yes, it'd be very interesting to see if you can get some sort of model that incorporated the difference correctly between the future cosmological constant and the past cosmological constant. But this class of models I'm discussing here, that difference is very small. And so therefore, we only interpret these models as indicating the behavior on long wavelengths corresponding to the very early universe.
Can I follow up on that one more thing? Yeah. Sorry, it's really interesting. But maybe if you thought of it from, I guess maybe where I was going is not something so ambitious as to really describe all of inflation and reheating and all this, but could you perturbatively define holography in Minkowski space doing something like this?
By taking lambda to zero.
Yeah. So if you could actually go to the next order and see that the cosmological constant changes, would this be a way of perturbatively understanding holography in the Minkowski space from holography in ADS or CFT?
It is possible. It's quite difficult. I mean, of course, a lot of people have sort of looked at this of taking ADS, CFT, and then trying to send the cosmological constant to zero to try and understand holography forming Minkowski space. And it's sort of difficult. A lot of people looked at this. I mean, the trouble is basically the QFT dual to Minkowski space appears to be non-local, and it has some. So in a sense, it's a very subtle question, you know, what happens when you send the cosmological constant to zero? And it's not clear to me that this setup here will give you any new insight into that problem. You could send little lambda to zero. So you could send the operator dimension little lambda to zero. So then you've got basically a marginal operator. In that case, you get logarithms appearing. So this would correspond to the case where you're doing scalar field on a fixed gravitational background. So in a sense, this would be an interesting test case just to look at.
What would happen if you had the two and the separation in cosmological constants spanning zero, so that one of them is the sitter and one of them is anti-sitter, because they're two different sides of the analytic continuation, and we know that one, if you roll down, unless you very carefully tune things, that's actually a crunching.
Right.
So this would be like an expanding and then...
Yeah, you sort of have
contracting
to...
universe, but you kind of say, well, one's maybe ADS.
Yeah, I don't know. You'd have to go back to the drawing board and, you know, start with your solution, see carefully how can you map it onto something where we understand how to do holography. So you sort of have to go back to first principles and start again at the beginning to see what's happening.
I understand one is ADS and one is the sitter, although I know that the flow...
I suspect there's going to be some problem where you cross zero, you know, some energy condition problem. But it's hard to say.
Naive question. Can you use these forms to predict something?
So I predicted the cosmological power spectra and all the non-Gaussianities using pure QFT arguments. I've just simply, in this case, you know, I've also shown you how to, you know, in this case, obviously, you can also compute it using standard gravity from the bulk side and check the two are the same. but the calculations were done purely holographically. And if you want new predictions, that would correspond to choosing different OPE coefficients, or, for example, taking this dual QFT to be at weak coupling, because the coupling of that QFT never entered anything I said. I just used conformal perturbation theory. So if that QFT were, in fact, at weak coupling, then this would be some strongly coupled gravity scenario in the bulk, and that would also be new predictions. So the holographic calculation allows you to do more general things than just standard Einstein gravity slow roll just by tuning the data in this conformal field theory.
Can I ask a more general question about holography? So if you want to identify time evolution of RG flow beyond tree level, how do you know that evolution is going to be unitary?
It's going to be?
Unitary?
Oh, well, yeah, good. No, actually, so this is a fascinating question. So we start off with some QFT that's dual to some asymptotic ADS spacetime. The two-point function is going to be positive definite because this is a unitary CFT. But when I do my analytic continuation n squared to minus n squared, then I find that the two-point function of this QFT is negative. So the dual QFT to cosmology is not going to be unitary. It's a Euclidean theory, so I don't think this is such a problem. Well, you can think of it as Euclidean theory, so I don't think this is such a problem because non-unitary Euclidean CFTs exist in nature and control, you know, for example, these polymer phase transitions. So, So the point was that we have to recover. Obviously, there's unitary evolution in the bulk in cosmology. Right, yeah. The question is, how does that map? What property of the QFT does that unitary bulk evolution map to? Exactly. Yeah, so this is something I think we can use this as a paradigm in which to answer, because, I mean, you know, there is this story in condensed matter where you know what the, what is it, CH dagger C or whatever, you know, there's this property that there is, it's well known that, these non-unitary CFTs have to satisfy this certain property involving this charge conjugation operator. And that's the one that will correspond to bulk unitarity. So using this as a toy model, we can exactly compute this property and check that it works. So this is, in fact, you know, this is the platform on which now to answer that question, basically. I was going to work on that next, basically. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe going back to one of my questions, but slightly differently. So obviously, time plays a very special role here. But in GR, it doesn't.
Yeah,
so
right.
It's a covariant theory, of course. And can you say something about covariance? I mean, can you mean by this simplification?
Yeah, right. It's sort of interesting, isn't it? Because, I mean, you know, the background solution, of course, breaks it down to...
Yeah. No, there is ADM formalism that does exactly the same thing in GR. And
yeah.
Then what you do is you have some non-covariant looking formalism that is essentially by construction covariant. So ADM decomposition could be maybe a way...
The ADM decomposition is basically at the heart of this Hamiltonian holographic renormalization that we do in the background of what I haven't talked about it today, but basically where those holographic formulae came from is this Hamiltonian formalism for holographic renormalization. And basically the ADM formalism is deeply built into that. So basically the Hamiltonian momentum constraint in the bulk map onto ward identities in the dual QFT.
So there's
an exact map. They're the same thing. So basically the Hamiltonian constraint maps onto the trace ward identity in the dual QFT, and the momentum constraint maps onto the transverse ward identity in the dual QFT. So basically, you know, the same story in the bulk can be mapped into the QFT. So for example, the elimination of vector modes works in the same way in the dual QFT. You can use the ward identities to eliminate.
So if that is all true, then there must be some hidden symmetry in your QFT side that you have not seen, because, you know, GR has much bigger symmetry when you include time. So
I suppose when you go to the fixed points and it becomes a CFT, that then you recover the full Euclidean. I mean, then you recover the full conformal field theory.
Yeah, that is one thing, of course. But I'm talking about general covariance on one side. So if you claim that there is this mapping, then the general covariance must be also hidden when you include the running of your theory into account.
Yeah, right.
As some additional symmetry.
I mean, it's probably easiest just to answer these questions in standard ADS holography, of course, where things are less controversial.
Would it be like scheme independent of RG flow?
Everything is scheme independent, I'm telling you about that. Yes, yeah, so that's right. So,
but does that correspond to the symmetry that he's talking about in the bulk?
I see.
There is a scale dependence that enters somehow, right?
I think the symmetry is just the fact you can choose your arbitrary or cut off arbitrarily anywhere in there.
So I worked out Nacallan Simoncic equations. I mean they're very useful. I mean, for example, if you look at these consistency relations where you look at the squeeze limit of the three-point function, and you can prove those on the holographic side by just using the Nacallan Simoncic equations. So basically the Nacallan Simoncic equations tell you how the correlators move as you change the as you change a cutoff, say. And so this basically maps onto the time evolution equations for zeta for the cosmological perturbations. When we're offline, I'll tell you more about it. But I mean, basically, you can basically map the Callan-Simoncic equations onto the time evolution equations.
Still, there is some. I believe that there must be some additional symmetry.
I don't think it's going to be anything additional, but it'd be interesting to.
What you do is you assume there's a uniform cutoff, but that doesn't have to be uniform cutoff time. The cutoff could vary over space.
I know, but
that's the same as before.
I don't think that's right, because I mean, the cutoff is probably the background solution. The background solution is an FRW cosmology where it's homogeneous on spatial slices, and so it's the background. The cutoff is this property related to the background solution. And by the way, I'm not just saying you can actually compute and show that time is minus log lambda. It's not just this is a general expectation people have from holography, but you can actually you can directly check it from this background solution, because if you look at this solution, look at what happens under a time shift. If you shift the times, basically, if you do a shift of the time coordinate, you can absorb that by rescaling of the scale factor A and a shift or whatever it is of the scalar field. So you can actually look at this background. You can prove directly that the minus the time translation operator is the dilatation operator in the dual theory. So it actually just follows from this background. That's a direct statement rather than a. Of course, it's our general intuition. You can actually directly check it in this background.
Could you describe a curved FRW universe?
Yeah, you could. Yeah. So basically. So correspond.
What change in the dual CFT would that make?
So it's on. Yeah. So for example, we had an open universe that corresponds to the dual CFT on a sphere. So basically, the curvature gets flipped under this domain wall cosmology correspondence. Mm-hmm. So it would then be a CFT on a sphere, and then of course you've got a new scale. So you've got finite size effects. Mm-hmm. So you've got a QFT on the sphere. You've got the radius of the sphere as a parameter, as a new dimensionable parameter. So basically, you'll get finite size effects that would be very interesting to compute. There's also the possibility you might condense, you might have a non-zero one-point function, so you would have condensation. Mm-hmm. So again, I think this would be fun to compute. Yes.
That sounds exactly like the model we now
have. Yeah, right. No, that's right. That would be good to... Yeah, so generally my perspective on all this is that, I'm looking at inflation because it's very simple to see how that connects to ADS-CFT, because asymptotic de Sitter maps onto asymptotic ADS. So in a sense... the motivation we're looking at inflation here is that this is a very simple starting point for understanding holographic cosmology. Obviously, you'd like to then generalize to understand much more of cosmology.
Well, thanks, Pauline.